All right, welcome to another episode of That's So Cincinnati. Jason Williams, along with my sidekick and pal, my friend Cherry Coolidge, and our friend and pal, Silent Phil on the ones and twos. We are back. It is hot. We are well into summer. And risk of sounding cheesy, but I'll say it anyway. We got a hot guest today, and that's Hamilton County Auditor Dusty Rhodes, who has been certainly in the news lately, embroiled in a controversy. And he will be here in just a little bit to answer our questions. Cherry, how are you?
I didn't know it was summer. Are you sure?
It still feels like it's like March 79th or something.
Honestly, things typically slow down in the summer, but that is certainly not something we've seen so far.
Yeah, well, great opportunity for me to segue into the fact that, yes, here locally, certainly we know what's going on nationally, but locally, it's just been one news story after another. And that's been no different this week already. And, yesterday as we record here on Tuesday, Monday, Cherry, Tamaya Dennard was back in the news with reaching a plea agreement in her federal bribery case. Talk about that and what went on there and, sort of what's next.
I mean, I have to say, covering City Hall has twice led me to courtrooms. You know, we saw the public records case last year with the five council members, took us over to Judge Ruhlman's room, and here we are. I was in federal court yesterday. Former Councilwoman Tamaya Dennard pleaded guilty to honest services wire fraud, which, as Carl, our editor, said, what does that mean, Cherry? It means that as a public servant, she was not honest with her constituents, and in this case, she is accused of trading her vote for money, and it happened over a wire, transfer, $10,000 and then another $5,000 in cash.
Gotcha.
So yesterday, we heard former Councilwoman Dennard say, I plead guilty.
So I said bribery there, then that's actually incorrect.
Well, that was a charge that was dropped, but whole case, that is part of all the accusations. It's just this one plea to a charge, but this case is certainly centered around that idea.
Now, has she hasn't been sentenced yet. Is any indication on when that would happen? And is she facing prison time, a major fine, probation? What's the sense you're getting there?
So we can see in the plea and the signed plea agreement in court records, she is facing a sentence between 20 months and 24 months. Okay. They're going to leave that discretion to the judge, but the judge can deviate from that. But that's kind of what's expected. This charge actually carries a much higher sentence than that. But they did a reduction for the idea that she is remorseful for her actions and regrets doing that. A lot of this case played out after the actual court hearing. Everything that happened in court yesterday was expected. It was laid out in a plea agreement, no drama, very quiet, just, a handful of reporters and the judge walking everyone through things. But afterwards, we saw some real, seems to be the theme of this podcast, fireworks on social media.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to ask you this. A couple of things I want to ask you too, Cherry, is we saw the federal prosecutor for the Southern District of Ohio, which is the region that we're in, David DeVillers, a Trump appointee last year, I believe. He tweeted out, late afternoon yesterday, right around 6 o'clock. And I'm quoting his tweet right now from the U.S. Attorney David DeVillers. Ms. Dennard treated a bribe as if it was a perk of the job. The corruption itself is almost overshadowed by how shockingly entitled she seemed to the bribe. A couple questions. You've covered courts for many, many years. Is it rare to see a federal prosecutor, take social media and go out that public, or is that pretty common? And then what do you think, what did he mean by how shockingly entitled she seemed to the bribe?
I mean, I have to say, I was so shocked. I had to, when this tweet was shared with me yesterday afternoon, I had to make sure that it was actually a true account. He doesn't have that little verified check mark next to his name. And I was so skeptical. This is not what U.S. District attorneys say. They say things like, justice was served here. You know, the law prevailed. They say scary type of things like that. They don't say what you just read. And so, of course, people are like, yes, Sherry, that account is real. But I literally went through it. I'm like, it seems real. But it was so out of left field for him to say that. And it's that's how strongly they felt. The FBI issued a very similar statement. When you look at this whole conversation, something that's very, you know, different about this case is not one person's word against another. This is on a wiretap in which it's completely recorded, and you can hear how things went, and the judge walked everyone through things, and it was a reminder that, you know, she kept asking for more money from the developer, who happens to be Frost Brown Todd, attorney Tom Gableman, who represents the bank's deal on the riverfront. We've talked a lot about that deal and, you know, how things go on that. And, you know, she agreed to vote in favor of a project to, in exchange for what ended up being $15,000.
And then you tweeted this also yesterday, Sherry, in which Tamaya Denard, before the hearing, took to Facebook and shared her thoughts. And you tweeted this, quote from her Facebook message. I'm reading your tweet right now. Denard on Facebook before the hearing, quote, "I never looked for the world to make me, therefore the world will never break me. Hashtag, Ben, don't break." Now, I saw some people respond to that on social media yesterday. You know, I'm paraphrasing, but basically saying, like, you know, they saw that as she's not really showing or, you know, taking responsibility, or, you know, maybe feeling regret for what happened here.
Her attorney did say, you know, after court, this isn't the time. Sentencing is not going to happen, they said, until later this year. And both sides basically at sentencing build a case. The prosecutors typically, you know, they build a case about why she really deserves, you know, to go to prison for this crime. And her attorneys build a case on, you know, why it should be the least sentence absolutely possible. And nobody really knows what that's going to be, because the judge can deviate from what's this agreed, the seemingly agreed sentence will be. And so, but her attorney, we didn't expect him to say anything, but he did say there's more to the story. And of course, everyone's ears perked up at that.
Ooh, interesting.
I don't know what that could be. Or maybe I do and I'm doing some reporting, but I don't know what that could be.
Okay. I mean, just would that all be potentially part of the plea agreement? Not knowing what that is, or what, not even speculating here on the podcast of what that is.
But yeah, cooperation. We'll talk about courts in general. Cooperation does play a role. If defendants know things and you can help the federal government in other investigations, that does always work in their favor. There is literally no indication that that's happening now. Whether it is or isn't, nobody knows. It is the favorite speculation in City Hall, I will say, of like, is she or isn't she? What could she know? What doesn't she know? And it is all speculation and rumors. There's only one person who knows about that. Well, herself and her attorneys probably. So I don't know what more to the story means, but it's certainly set up a guessing game, unlike anything I've seen in a while over there.
Yeah, you know, I'm obviously completely unrelated to Tamaya Denard here in Cincinnati, but as this is news is hitting here in Cincinnati, go up north to Toledo, Sherry, and the federal government, the federal prosecutors. There's another federal case just happening where four city council members in Toledo were just arrested on the. I don't have the exact charges, but on alleged corruption. Do you see this as I don't know.
There's no other way to look at this other than the federal government is on a mission to make sure people's public officials are honest. Because we saw a case last year, in the springtime out of Dayton, where there was an indictment of a federal official, of a public official. And now, I mean, coming one day after Tamaya Dennard's plea, I do think that we are seeing, you know, this is by the federal government is a real look at, you know, corruption in government in general. The person that who's leading the FBI here, he's pretty new. They change out these people who run the area offices fairly frequently. This person is very well-versed on public corruption, and I don't think that is an accident.
Is that the person over the state of Ohio or over the Cincinnati area?
It's like the Cincinnati office.
Gotcha. Does the Cincinnati office then oversee other parts of the state, or is it just basically here in the region?
It's like you're encroaching on my morning reporting. To see exactly how far all of this reaches and where the districts go.
Gotcha.
But I don't have the answer to it yet, obviously.
Yeah. I mean, this is just me, the political writer in me. It makes me wonder if, you know, that Trump will use this somehow in his campaign in Ohio, you know, around cleaning up corruption. Is certainly, as we've all seen the headlines and the polling in Ohio here, that Ohio has become a very competitive state all of a sudden in this presidential race. So it's interesting.
I will tell you something that I have heard. We are the biggest difference that we've seen. We have a new Trump appointed U.S. District Attorney. They don't seem to be messing around. Typically in cases, we saw Tamaya Dennard arrested. And I think the same thing in Toledo today for this, and not like, oh, an agreed, you know, plea and you turn yourself in, and not a lot, you know, there was a lot of people around Tamaya's arrest that morning, right before she was headed to City Hall to chair a meeting.
Do you think there's politics involved in that, around the drama of an arrest of a politician, or? I don't know. I'm just asking a question.
I mean, I don't want to say if it was political or not, but I would say what happened here is the absolute worst thing a public official can do. You know, when I've said this before on this podcast and to people, when I walk into City Hall, I don't care how anybody feels about deals that are on the table, right? Here's this tax abatement, and what do you think of the banks and everything that it looks like and all of these different things. As long as people vote from their heart, and they truly believe, then that's the vote. And you have to trust that when you walk into City Hall. You do. Yep. And in this case, that proved not to be true. And that's a really stunning thing to think about elected officials. It has to be honest. And it's such a convoluted term, honest services wire fraud. But that's why it's called that. Honest services, people are elected. They take an oath. I went to an oath. Like a swearing in of these officials who swore to uphold the law and do what was right. And that's where honest services comes in. And that's, so this is, you know, this isn't, you know, a violent crime or the criminal kind of like where you're seeing all this gun violence and everything. But as a public official, it is the worst thing that you can do.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Good stuff, Sherry. Good reporting. Could keep, you know, we know you're going to be all over this story as it continues to unfold. And let's switch gears and jump to our special guest this week, Dusty Rhodes. All right, special guest time here on the That's So Cincinnati podcast. Pleased to welcome as our guest this week, longtime Hamilton County Auditor, Dusty Rhodes. Dusty, how are you?
Good. Great to be with you, Jason.
Hey, thanks for joining us today. We'll jump right to it. You were in the headlines last week and over a tweet that you had put out about the abortion issue, and the Hamilton County Democratic Party put out a statement saying they want to censure you.
Yes.
Let me read the tweet and read the response a little bit, just to give everybody, I know,
yeah, good,
all of our listeners
context.
Do read the Inquirer, and Scott Wortman wrote this story, but he kind of put it all together. This was Dusty's tweet. After Cincinnati City Council painted a Black Lives mural in front of City Hall, which itself has been They don't know how to protect it or preserve it. It's not been an easy path. But it was unveiled to much fanfare, and Dusty had this to say on Twitter. Just wondering when they are going to paint Black Lives Matter on Auburn Avenue. You know, in front of the building where they terminate black lives and white ones, too. Almost every day of the week, Rose tweeted. So that was kind of how Scott summed that tweet up. Auburn Avenue, of course, is where Planned Parenthood, Cincinnati's sole abortion clinic, operates. And the Hamilton County Democratic Party did not like that.
Shame on them.
The chairwoman, Gwen McFarland, she issued a statement. This is very rare for the party to do things like this. And she said that she's going to launch the process to censor our auditor, introducing a resolution for the party not to endorse him. And so that's kind of like, that's where we're at right now.
Let it rip. Yeah, it's a shame, really. But this whole Black Lives Matter thing has gotten in my craw real good. As I've said, I appreciate the sentiment, but not the organization, which is a Marxist outfit hell-bent on destroying our country as it stands right now. And that's provable. The three women that run it are Marxist by their own words, and by the party aligning itself with that indirectly, I think they're setting themselves up for some real serious problems. But more to the point, Planned Parenthood was started by Margaret Sanger expressly to kill black babies. That's history. That's undeniable. And they're killing more black babies in abortions than white as a ratio. And I think those Black Lives Matter just as much as the three little kids who were killed in Chicago this weekend. And nobody's talking about that. It's all this narrowly focused thing and this anarchist organization that's trying to, and everybody is caving into them. Corporate leaders are pledging their troth and everything else. This is ridiculous. And I just think it's bad for the country and it's bad for the Democratic Party to be aligned with these people. And, they can censure me till the cows come home. I'm going to say what I think because I'm not going to let the party do my thinking for me.
I do want to say this is a very serious conversation in our country right now. And each of these organizations would not agree with any of this. And since, you know, this is just a conversation with a newsmaker and political leaders in our community, which do try and do that every week. And so I don't really want to get into the idea too much about, because we don't have like both sides of the issue.
And yeah, right.
This is a difficult conversation. I do want to take this in the direction, though, that this is not a typical politician's way to be. Typically, politicians parse their words and know they shouldn't say things, even if they think them. And that's not your style, right, Dusty?
Well, let me say this. They parse their words if they're afraid. And most of the conservative politicians are fearful. The left-wing politicians don't parse their words. The Sittenfelds and Seelbachs and Landsmans of the world don't parse their words. They're out there sitting in the middle of the street with the rioters. But nobody is stepping up and saying, hey, wait a minute, what's happening here? What's really happening? And I don't think it's good.
Well, we have seen, of course, both sides of the coin of where things are happening. I mean, some of the people we were just talking about before you came on, things that were going on in City Hall with some of these protesters. There were many peaceful protests, though, with people trying to express their opinion about George Floyd and, you know, feeling very passionate about that. And I think the council members would say that's where their hearts lie.
Well, I don't think there's anybody that isn't passionate about what happened to him. It's an awful thing. It's a horrible thing. But to use that as an excuse to destroy buildings and blocks and take over cities and everything else, I think that's a bridge too far. But everybody is scared to say it. And I can't believe it. They're hiding under their desks. And it's time to step up and say, wait a minute. And that's my point. And that's what I feel very strongly. And I'm not going to hide my opinion under a bushel basket. I've been pro-life from the start. They knew I was pro-life when I first ran for Delhi trustee. I was pro-life when they asked me to run for auditor. I was pro-life when they endorsed me 2 years ago. Now, to expect that I'm going to keep quiet about that and hunker down and try to fake people out, and that's ridiculous. That's not what it's all about. And I don't see that as a litmus test by any stretch of the imagination, but there's a lot of Catholics and evangelical Christians and pro-life people that can be persuaded to vote Democratic, and they're kissing them goodbye. And I think it's awful.
You know, back to your, I'm glad you mentioned all that, that this has been, I was going to ask you about, like, the fact that you've been consistent in your pro-life views your entire political career. This is certainly not the first time you've tweeted about that. You've tweeted quite a bit about it. In fact, it's something I think that you tweet quite often about.
Right.
Why now and this tweet, do you think, and from your perspective, why this one at this moment and caused the statement about?
Well, I think, honestly, some of the lefties in the party saw it as an attack on Black Lives Matters and saw it diminishing that message somehow. I don't see how, and it's not logical, but they climbed on Gwen McFarland, who is relatively new in the job and a good person. I like Gwen personally, but she couldn't stand up to them, and she buckled. Tim Burke wouldn't have never allowed this to happen. Tim Burke believed in a big tent and brought us all together. And his only thing was do your job well and don't reflect badly on the party. And that's what I've done consistently. I've never brought scandal to the party, and they can't say that about some of their favorites in City Hall, one in particular, and three others are credibly accused of breaking public records laws. And that's what I've tried to do, and try to represent the party well by serving all the people fairly. And I think that Gwen, being new, is susceptible to the progressives, the same gang that got Jim Neal. I mean, she originally said Jim Neal was going to be endorsed. But along the way, she caved into these people. And she's doing it again. And I'm saddened for that. I talked to Gwen, and I said, Gwen, do you think I'm a racist? You've known me for 30 years. And she said, no. And I said, do you think I'm a sexist? And she said, no. But she issued that release calling me both of things. And that's the thing that stops everything cold. If Jason, I call you a racist, that's it. You've got to defend yourself. Well, I'm not going to defend myself because I don't dignify that charge with a response. It's ridiculous. I
think that Gwen is navigating the party in a very different time than Tim did. First of all, I do feel like the party is much more progressive right now. You can see this with how blue Hamilton County is coming, but also she's guiding it through a time of, I mean, social media, even compared to a year ago or 2 years ago, I don't think I'm speaking out of turn here. It's completely out of hand. Of what,
yeah, right.
Everybody is just willing to say on social media to each other. Yeah. And did you give pause to thinking about entering the conversation in that way? Because it's almost like you can't win on social media.
That's a fact. But I felt very strongly about that. Black lives matter in the womb as well as in life outside the womb. And nobody wants to talk about that. And I think it's a valid point. And I think it ought to be discussed.
Before the party issued that statement, did they reach out to you to discuss it? Or did they just issue a statement and then
Gwen called me.
Happened after?
Gwen called me and discussed it, but she didn't indicate to me that she was going to go for a censure. She talked about me coming in for a meeting with somebody or group of people. And I said, what's that going to do? I mean, why? But that's about the extent of it. She called me, though, and we talked. But,
was this an do you see this, Dusty? I know I had you on my radio show on 700 last week, too. And do you see this as at least a certain faction of the party's effort to try to get you to force you to retire?
Oh, I maybe I don't consider that. I may well. I've been at it for 32 years, and it's been a good run. Maybe not. I don't know.
The Democratic Party, as it stands today, you know, we talked about you being pro-life. John Cranley, Denise Driehaus, I'm just thinking locally here, have traditionally been pro-life Democrats. Is there any room in today's Democratic Party, not just locally, but overall nationally, for a pro-life elected official?
Well, that's a good question. And the chairman of the party said no to that a couple of months ago when there's some kind of primary in Kansas City or somewhere, and walked it back after a fact. But they're driving the people out of the party who are pro-life. I think it's a bad mistake. Tom Lucan was pro-life. He won that congressional seat for 14 years. Jerry Lubbers served in a Republican area and won that seat and was very pro-life in the state house. And I think the problem with it not being a big tent party, as the Republican chairman a couple of months ago was bemoaning the fact that we had crossover candidates, Jim Neal, who got 61% of the vote, I, who got almost two-thirds of the vote, Denise Driehaus. And if you drive those people out of the party, you replace them with candidates that have got to have more attention to win and command more resources, and it thins out the whole thing. Now, I think they're banking on the fact that they think Hamilton County has swung Democratic for the most part because of the presidential races of the last couple of years. And they may be right. That may be a good bet. But all Democratic county is no better than an all Republican county, which I faced when I first ran for this office. And sooner or later, it's going to catch up to you with corruption. Maybe that's the big thing. That's how I was able to get elected. And if they get, they let this all go to their head and get power hungry, it's not good government. And that's a shame.
Well, one thing I want to ask you about, too, on the on an issue, we could discuss this about several, I think, different social issues as well, or, you know, even issues overall. But, like, you look at the auditor's office, and I understand, like, if, look, just the abortion issue, since we're on that topic, and choice and pro-life, I understand if that is a issue in discussion for like a state house seat, uh-huh, or the governor's race. You know, the state has so much to do with that issue, or, you know, congressional seat. But when you look here locally and you look at a commissioner seat, auditor, city council, mayor, that is an issue that those seats and those local governments have absolutely no say over, nothing to do with. And yet, do you think then why do you think it shouldn't be such a big issue then when it comes to discussing your role or addressing the role of an auditor per se?
That's a reasonable thing to expect. And that's what people have told me that support me that are pro-abortion. And I've endorsed candidates that are pro-abortion in the past because I thought they were good people and were going to do a good job. But that's a fair point. And it's amazing. I really struck a nerve with that tweet, I think. And I don't regret it a bit because I think it's a discussion that we have to have. I mean, why do they put the abortion clinics in low-income and African-American neighborhoods? Why do they do that? What about the Gosnell thing in Philadelphia. That was horrifying. Well,
in this case, it is amid the hospitals, too,
yeah,
and the medical community.
Right. But I think...
Do you regret tying the two together? Because I do understand that this issue is very much about being pro-life for you. Do you regret tying Black Lives Matters to this issue?
No, not at all, because I'm saying all Black Lives Matter. And then I don't regret it at all. And if it shines a spotlight on the organization itself, which is media will not do. I mean, the media is so scared and so in the bag. It's a Marxist organization. The three women running it are Marxists. Now, they've hijacked the sentiment of most people to be fair and decent and treat people like as they want to be treated, but they've hijacked it. And you see the results in the cities across the country. And I'm amazed that politicians are hiding under their desks. So I don't regret it at all. I think we ought to focus on that organization and what they really stand for. Defunding the police. You want to run on that? Okay, Democrats, run on that if you want to. The Democratic Party put out a tweet this morning. They pulled it back that the president's 4th of July at Mount Rushmore was a tribute to white supremacy. Now, give me a break. They pulled it back after it was out there for a little. But I'm not going to apologize for my skin color, and I don't expect anybody else to do it either.
But you're telling us, because typically when we hear about the Black Lives Matter conversation, it's like it pits Black Lives Matter versus All Lives Matter. But you did say a phrase that I thought was interesting, because you said all Black Lives Matter.
Yeah.
And that seems like that's what it is to you. To you, it's not an either or of like Black Lives Matter to all lives, right? You're likening it to really are taking it down the issue with abortion.
Well, I think all lives matter, too. I mean, it's not just Black lives, but how can you be a sincere Black Lives Matter person and not be horrified at the amount of Black lives that are taken every weekend in Chicago? Every weekend. And not little kids getting killed. And not a word of that about that.
Well, I do think there's a word of, I mean, people are addressing that, and they know that that's not okay either, the level of violence there. When we read about that here in Cincinnati after weekends, and we hear a lot about our own violence, I do think that people think that that's not okay.
Yeah, well, it seems like all the attention is given to a bunch of rowdy rioters and looters, and I hear that Michigan Avenue is a disaster area up there, and that has been on the press. The media hasn't covered that. Every store window is broken up there on the Miracle Mile. And that's the result of whipping up this frenzy. I said for 50 years, I've been welcomed into African-American homes and churches and communities. And I've always tried to treat everybody with respect and do my part to lift up people when I could. And here in the office, we had 4 employees out of 200 who are African-American when I came in here. We now about 20% of 78. It varies. But I did that without issuing virtue signaling press releases or hiring a $125,000 diversity and inclusion consultant. What a sweet deal that is. I did it by putting ads in the African American weekly newspaper when I had job openings. And
I had never heard of racism. Gets that word gets thrown around and lobbed around here a lot.
Uh-huh.
I've not ever heard that word used about you.
Yeah, well, we've hired people on the ability, and you know, guess what? It represents close to the makeup racially of the county. And we never categorize or minimize people or insult them. insulted anybody by saying you're here to fill a quota. That's the most insulting thing in the world. And the benefit is we've got some wonderful employees, and we did it all with, as I say, marching up and down. We just decided from the get-go that that had to be done. And like I say, the African-American community has supported me in my radio and my politics, and I've tried to be supportive of that segment of the population as well, because they're good people.
Given jumping back to the party itself and your role in the party, given today here in June of 2020 and you know, where the party stands and what it stands for. You know, you've been outspoken in your support of Donald Trump. Obviously we talked about, you know, the pro-life issue.
I haven't been supportive of Donald Trump. I've been appalled at the horrible media coverage he's gotten. Give the guy a break. I mean, give the guy a fair shot. 94% of the coverage is negative. And the latest thing, he knew of a Russian bounty and American soldiers, and that's not true. And the New York Times is pushing it. The Washington Post is out from the get-go. And I think if you're going to win an election, honestly, you win it on your ideas and what you're going to do for people, not tearing the other guy or gal down. And this whole thing that the party has been into, resistance. Come on. That's so petty.
You're saying things, though, that seem like you really are not in lockstep with what Democrats are thinking right now. I think the story definitely with the president is still unfolding. There's a lot of things. It's starting to come out with this or that. We don't know a lot about it right now. It's starting, but the party, I think, would be appalled at the idea that you defended the president. Do you feel like you are in lockstep with the Democratic Party right now?
Well, no. That was going to be my question. What makes you a Democrat?
I grew up in a Democratic family. My dad was a milkman, and he graduated from my school in the teeth of the Depression. Franklin D. Roosevelt was the president. Syracuse was a big Republican area, and I naturally gravitated towards that because of my family, because of my love for the union movement, and the fact that I was swimming upstream. I mean, it was easy to be a Republican in Syracuse once upon a time, not so easy to be a Democrat. And I like to swim up the stream, and I like to be independent, and I like to be able to say what I think. And that's the word here why I became a Democrat, because the Republicans were a machine. When I came up, it was a machine. You followed the party line or else. And Will Rogers said it best: I belong to no organized political party. I am a Democrat. But lately, it seems to be the Democrats are wanting absolute march and lockstep with these issues that are against my core beliefs. And I said it to myself a long time ago: the Democratic Party is not going to save my immortal soul. That's it. My church comes before my party, and that's the way I am.
That's not something new about you. That's very true. I have heard you say that before.
Yeah. But like I say, I think it's appalling, and I've said it before. I don't know what it is to be singled out for skin color or because I look different from the majority of people, and I feel well sympathize with that feeling, and it's got to stop. But the way to do it is not by burning down buildings or destroying neighborhoods or that kind of thing. And
I know you've talked about you mentioned here and you mentioned last week too about maybe retiring after your term ends in 2022. If you decide you want to pursue another term, will you continue on with the Democratic Party, or will you switch to independents, or maybe even Republican?
No, I think that's a discussion for another day. I'm not particularly ready to make that decision, but I'd rather fight than switch.
Has the Republican Party approached you at all already? It's never
over the years.
Planning for elections ahead, like 2 years ahead.
No, no. But over the years, they've several times. People have asked me, but I figured it was best to stay where I was.
Not recently, though. No one's asked you.
No, no.
Yeah.
You know what? I do think that not everyone is like, oh, Dusty Rhodes is a Democrat. You know what I think they know you for?
What?
Common sense.
Well,
you know, tell us about that billboard, because that is what you're known for, right?
Yep.
How did that come to be? It's been like the most crisp and clear campaign slogan for any politician around here for decades.
Well, that's what was my idea. I claimed that idea. I thought to myself, I can't afford a lot of TV, and I doubt if that's as effective as it once was, or cost effective. But billboards were great. But you're speeding past a billboard at 35, 40 miles an hour. You don't have time to read my life story or look at pictures of me and the family or anything. I had to get a quick message across, and I just said my name and common sense and leave it at that. And that's the message I wanted to burn into people's minds and make them think about. And I think it worked well.
Well, certainly.
It's something that never goes out of, you know, that's something that we never need less of. We
yeah, right.
More of it.
I tried to live up to that, too. And like I say, I mean, you know, the things we've done in this office, I'm real proud of. Giving back $50 million over the years for schools and local governments that I could have spent. That's big with me. I feel very proud about that. The wonderful staff that works with me, great. And there's all kinds of people. The thing, I did away with a political dues checkoff the minute I walked in the door, and I told the staff, and there were all Republican patronage employees when I got here. I said, I don't care how you vote. That's your business, not mine. Just keep it out of the office and do your job. And about half believed me and half didn't, but I lived it and showed them that I didn't care.
Is anyone still left from that time?
A couple, yeah, a couple of here. And I've got some daughters of women that used to work here back then. One gal came back after raising her family, and we delighted to have her. So it's a good scene. But everybody here knows that we're not proselytizing staff for anything. Politically, we don't let folks come in and make pitches for donations to anything, and we certainly don't inflict our political views on the office. Our job is to serve all the people the best we can, and that's my mantra from the day I started.
And to do math.
Yeah.
Every time I need records from your office, it does involve a lot of math. It's a lot of math.
We were in one of the first offices in the country to put the property records up on the computer, on the internet. And we're constantly working on that aspect of getting our information together and presenting in a way that would be useful to people. So we've led the way on a number of things. So I feel real good about that.
A lot of serious stuff here, and hey, that's your job as an elected official to answer tough and serious questions. However, before we go, a little fun question for you. You are a huge baseball fan, and I want to ask you, the Yankees and baseball are coming back. Are the Yankees built for a 60-game season, and can they win it all?
Oh, I hope so. I hope so. I'm enjoying some of the old World Series replays, but you can change your politics and you can change your church and you can even change your family, change your wife or change your spouse, but never, never trust an individual that changes his baseball team.
Well, good stuff, Dusty. I really appreciate you taking this time today and, answering our questions and, chatting with
us. It's a lot of fun to talk to you guys. And I'll tell you one thing. You two, Sherry and Jason and Scott Wardman, do a fantastic job. And I said this about Scott. I'll say it about you, too. Well, Jason, you're out because you're calling me. But Sherry and Scott, I never can tell what they think about a story they cover. They always present both sides and never let their own opinions into it. And that's great. That is terrific.
And Dustin, I really appreciate that. I mean, we've worked together a long time and our conversations are usually, let's talk about this property valuation or that property valuation. Your office is extremely helpful and transparent. This is the most difficult conversation we've ever had. It's hard to talk about these things.
Yeah, for sure. But we're kind of always try to be open and give you everything you need, your story, because you've got a tough job. And translating into words that people understand when they read them is not the easiest job in the world, believe me.
Dusty, I would second your sentiment about Scott and Sherry, and really appreciate you taking the time here today to talk with us.
Lots of fun.
Thanks.
Always.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
See you soon.
All right. Thanks again to Dusty Rhodes for joining us today. Sherry, City Council, the budget is done. It is in the books. They are now officially on recess. Does that mean you're on recess and getting ready to enjoy your summer?
You know what? I was just kidding earlier. Of course, it's summer. I do have a child. I'm going to take some days to enjoy the actual outdoors. Still be working, so everyone keep reading. Let's not go crazy. But this is the summer of outdoors, and it's really, I went kayaking the other week. We took Alex for Father's Day, River's Edge Outfitters. I can't say enough good things about how helpful they are and the fact that it's for everybody.
But where are they based at?
Waynesville, Ohio. Yes, from my house, it was a drive, but worth every second.
Yep.
They put you in the water, they have everything you need, and it's a very easy paddle down the Little Miami. And you couldn't be more social distanced, but there's still other people around to help you. And we had a really good day. You can make it as long. So basically like a 3-mile paddle, but you can make it as long or as short a time as you want to just really enjoy the outdoors. And we definitely did that.
That's awesome. Does your son Jack have his own kayak?
He doesn't. I don't think he's ready for that just yet. I was thinking maybe next year. So I'm his chief paddler.
Oh, he sits in your kayak with you?
When he go, I take my kayak out with my friends. So I have my own, which I love, my little blue boat. But when we take him, we typically rent like a 2-seat kayak, and then I'm with him, which I love because it's such good conversation time. You know where you can't have a screen? On the Little Miami.
Well, darn, I was thinking about, because, I bought a kayak last summer, and I need to go kayaking with you and Alex, and I was thinking, maybe we could record a podcast from the kayaks, but probably not a good
idea. Bill, you want to bring that equipment out there? I'm sensing that.
Yeah, I mean, Sherry, you said this is the summer of outdoors. Clearly, the news has been lately that a lot more cases of COVID-19. Looks like the sort of spike, well, not sort of, it is. There's a spike in cases. And a lot of questions about whether, I guess certainly probably the fun stuff, is it going to shut back down? But you're right. Like, there's still a lot of things that people can do. And you're doing the kayaking. I have really, and I think I talked about this on the podcast last time, you know, 2 or 3 weeks ago, I took my kids down to Smale Riverfront Park. Well, I've kind of built on that and trying to find other parks to take them to. We've done Summit Park and Blue Ash, which if anyone has not been there, and Smale to go, man, these, they did not spare any expense on either one of those parks. So if you want a suburban park, go to Summit, and you want an urban park, go to Smale. Or Washington Park downtown as well. Hit a little Winton Woods campground, Sherry, on Friday night with my buddies, guys I hadn't seen, you know, since before the shutdown started in March, and it was just a good time getting out there, hanging out.
Did you social distance around a campfire?
It was, yeah. No, we had it was like five or six of us, just a delightful time telling stories, and yeah, we didn't talk about all the news that's going on in the world. We just told stories about our families and you know sports and just the fun stuff, and it was really simple stuff, but a really nice time. I tell you, like, and you know, it's not that expensive to rent a camping spot, and you know, basic stuff, just getting out, parks and kayaking and pitching a tent out at Winton Woods. And I'll tell you what, we have some great, great parks around here. And certainly I've seen a lot of people take advantage of it, which is good to see.
All right. I'm going to have to lure you over near me, Mount Echo. That's got, put that on your list.
Mount Echo Park.
Yeah. I'll meet you there.
Okay. Done. Yeah. Want to discover, or rediscover in some cases, all the parks around the city and the county and region, and doesn't have to even be Hamilton County. So great stuff. Hey, thanks, everyone. Sorry about last week. We had some technical issues, and we got the best in the business and Phil, and something happened and just couldn't. We actually recorded an episode, but we couldn't resurrect it. There was something corrupt about the file. And but thanks for hanging in there with us. We think we got the issue rectified, and no breaks in the action. Even though we're all going to take some of our summer vacations here coming up, we're still going to have a podcast. So check it out in your favorite podcast places. Here this summer on Wednesday mornings, and through the rest of the week. Sherry, any parting words for us?
That's all I got today, Jason.
Good stuff. Thanks, everyone. If you're on summer vacation, enjoy yourself, and we will catch you next week.